The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So in exploring mindfulness, this very ordinary capacity of our minds to just know what's happening while it's happening in the present moment. I was talking about that during the guided meditation and how amazing it is and how simple it is. We might ask or be curious about how something so simple or something so ordinary can actually help us. I mean, why do this? Why be aware of what's happening in the present moment while it's happening? As we turn attention to what's happening in the present moment, so often we're confronted by unpleasant experience. Or if we're confronted by pleasant experience, we get worried or fearful about it going away. So there's a lot of things that we see as we open our experience, our mindfulness to the present moment that might ask, why do this? I mean, I certainly did when I first started. It's like, what good is this? How does it help? I was fortunate in my beginning days of practice to have kind of felt like I'd hit bottom, and so I was willing to try anything. Nothing else had seemed to work, and so friends told me it was useful. This book I was reading told me it was useful to notice what was going on in the present moment. Even though I didn't understand how or why it would work, I was willing to try it. And it does begin to reveal with a very simple instruction. It's not just about being aware of what's happening in the present moment. It's curious about being aware of something happening in the present moment as something happening in the present moment. And that may sound like nothing. How is that different than just being aware in the present moment? It's got a fundamental, I lost it for a second. A fundamental difference there is that rather than being interested in what's happening in the present moment to further some agenda that we have, some agenda about getting what we want or getting rid of what we don't want or having people like us or having the world be the way we want it to be, instead, this shift of attention is about understanding what's happening in the present moment. Just not to further an agenda except for the understanding of it. And in particular, the understanding of how does what's happening in the present moment, what's going on in this mind, lead me into struggle, into suffering, into stress, into unease? And how might it head me in another direction? This is the question the Buddha posed for himself when he began looking at his experience. And I think it was a brilliance of the Buddha to actually recognize that this very simple, ordinary capacity, mindfulness, which is something that we're just given as human beings, when it is cultivated and directed to this question of looking at what's happening in the present moment with this curiosity about, and how does the mind get caught up in struggle? What happens there? And in particular, I think the Buddha was interested in what parts of that are part of my own mind. I mean, there's stuff that happens in the world that's out of my control, but what's here? What's possible to alter the landscape of in my own experience? And so that's the question he asked. And you know, I think of him as a psychologist, really, more than anything. You know, he looked at his own mind. He wasn't a psychologist like we have psychologists today, where they create, you know, groups of studies and ask people to fill out questionnaires. But he decided to look at his own mind instead. And what he discovered there, he had the wisdom to recognize, this isn't just about this mind. This is the way human minds work. And so he began teaching. He began exploring, you know, helping others with this, helping others to see the same thing he had understood. And so I look at what the Buddha taught us, this amazing psychology of pointing out to us how it is that in terms of navigating the world, in terms of navigating experience, a lot of which is out of our control, what aspects of it do we have some ability to shape from the inside? We do have agency as human beings, and we can shape how we respond to things. We are shaped very much. We are shaped by our conditioning. We are shaped by our families, by our cultures, by our schooling, by our friends. We are continually being shaped. It's not over yet. We have been shaped. We are continuing to be shaped. And yet it's not just an external to internal phenomenon. It's not just that the outer forces shape who we are and we're like automatons going about our day having a button been pushed. Because there is the agency from inside also to shape how we are. Which is, I think, one of the things that really makes us human. This capacity to shape from the inside. And this capacity to shape, to head us, in terms of what the Buddha was exploring, his question of how do we shape the life to release struggle, stress, unease, suffering. Many different words for this Pali word, dukkha, that's often translated as suffering. It's got a wider range than just suffering. Suffering's a pretty big word for us, but unease, distress, stress, those words too. How do we move? How do we shape our minds to let go of that? The parts that we have possibility to control or possibility to shape. It's not so much about control. It's more about creating the internal climate, the internal conditions that allow the mind to release that struggle. It's not going to eliminate pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral experience from our world, but it can dramatically shape how we are when experience is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. Last week, I talked about how we might work with experience, in particular in response to when things are unpleasant, reactivity to things that are unpleasant, the aversion side of the equation, which is a big way we suffer in our lives. So many different emotions related to aversion, reactive emotions that we do immediately recognize as suffering if we start to look at them, like anger, hatred, cruelty, hostility, irritation, annoyance, frustration, even simple dissatisfaction, those kinds of states. When we actually look at those states in and of themselves. And here again, the question of exploring what's actually happening right now. Oh, dissatisfaction is happening right now. What is the experience of dissatisfaction? That's the shift that the teachings of the Buddha ask us to make. It's rather than acting on that, knowing, oh yeah, I'm dissatisfied, let me fix this. The Buddha's teachings suggest we look at, well, what is this dissatisfaction? How does it feel? And that simple shift shows us very quickly that dissatisfaction hurts, that hatred hurts, that anger hurts. And so looking at aversion, as we turn our attention to that with the mind, with mindfulness, with wise mindfulness, we pretty quickly see how painful it is. Today I'd like to explore the other side, the side of wanting, of desire for things to be pleasant, of holding on when things are pleasant. So last week I talked about our relationship to unpleasant and the aversion side, and today I'd like to talk about our relationship to pleasant and the desire side. This relationship may be a little bit more challenging to see the immediate suffering of, because when we are in the presence of pleasant, it feels good. And so it doesn't inherently feel like a problem. And it's not inherently a problem, actually. It's not inherently a problem. And yet our relationship to that pleasant is where the problem begins to creep in. And that is that we don't just simply allow pleasant experience to be here and live its life. We take action to try to hold on to it. We cling to it. And often that clinging manifests as states like anxiety, worry, fear. Oh, is this going to go away? So when we have something that we like, we may worry about protecting it, keeping it, holding on to it. Or just the simple, even if we're not feeling worried about it, just the simple ownership of it, the feeling of this is mine, has a kind of contraction to it. These are harder to notice, actually. I think the experience of desire is a subtler phenomenon in some cases. Sometimes it's really obvious, in particular when desire is frustrated. We feel the pain of desire. And so when we see something that we want and we can't get it, that frustrated desire becomes more obvious. And sometimes we feel like we're doing something wrong. If I can't figure out how to shape my world to have these pleasant things, then I'm failing. Or somebody else is in my way. It's somebody else's fault. So we blame. We either shame ourselves or blame others at times if we have that frustrated desire, as opposed to just noticing or recognizing sometimes we don't get what we want. This is a truth of life. So one of the key ways that desire hides from us, hides its painfulness from us, is because when we are caught up by desire, it's like we have this idea. So desire creates the idea of what it will be like to have the thing, to have either some material thing or to have something intangible, or to have people think about us the way we'd like them to think about us. So we want something. And we, in that desire, the way desire works, it creates a kind of an image or a scenario in the mind of what it's going to be like to have that thing. And that idea is pleasant. Even before we have the thing, this is called anticipation. Anticipation feels good. And I just remembered this Winnie the Pooh quote. I loved Winnie the Pooh. Still love Winnie the Pooh. Some character in Winnie the Pooh asked Pooh, "What is your favorite thing?" And Winnie the Pooh said, "Well, honey is really, really wonderful, but there's a moment just before I get honey that's even more wonderful." That, I would say, is the most wonderful thing. That's actually quite a bit of wisdom there, because actually that anticipation, the idea of having something, has a stronger quality of pleasantness than the actual having of it. So it's worth looking at that. It's worth looking at that dynamic of how the mind creates that image. And so what we're doing in that moment, actually, we are not noticing in that moment. We are living in the fantasy, the future, the idea, the anticipation of having something. And in that moment, we are not noticing the contraction or the pain of the wanting itself, because wanting actually hurts too. Wanting, as soon as wanting springs up in our system, there's already a feeling that we are lacking something. There's a feeling that something's off. And so that anticipation, what wanting does is it masks the feeling of the offness in favor of the idea of the having. And the idea is just an idea. We are living not in reality, not in what's actually here, but in some construct of our minds. And so the Buddha pointed this out. So in exploring our relationship to pleasant, the Buddha didn't say we should try to avoid pleasant experience. He did ask us to undertake an investigation about it, though. He said, and this is, I love this about the Buddha's teachings. Again, I think he's an amazing psychologist. He basically asks us to start where we are. He says, yes, there is pleasure to be found from having things that we like, from sense pleasure. There is a pleasantness to that, from having something that we want. There is a pleasure to that. And, you know, we get something that we want. It feels good. The Buddha suggests that we investigate that pleasantness. And in particular, so he's got a three-part instruction for us around looking at this pleasure that we get from sense desire. He said, notice the gratification that we get from it, the danger, and the escape. So he talked about this as a three-part teaching. So I'll go through each of these, hopefully, briefly enough that we'll get through it in the next 25 minutes or so. So the gratification, the Buddha, again, acknowledging that, yes, it feels good to get what we want. And he said, you know, you don't have to try to avoid that, but investigate it. Start looking at it. What happens in particular, he said, notice how far that gratification extends. So essentially, how long does it last? How long does it feel good? And what actually is it that feels good? I'll add that, because that's a piece that is quite eye-opening as we start to look at our minds, look at what's happening in our own minds. With this tool of mindfulness to turn what's happening in the present moment, we start to see that what we think we like about getting something that we want may not be exactly what we think it is. So the first piece about looking at this is to look at the pleasure. Look at the pleasure of getting what we want. That first piece, look at what we are actually finding pleasure in. We talked about the anticipation a moment ago. That's a thought we're taking pleasure in. It's not anything that's real. It's a construct of our minds. So that's one piece of this exploration, noticing that some of the pleasure happens in the thought itself. And then in looking at the having, you know, when we get something, we get what we want, we have it. What is that dynamic like? Here the Buddha had some other really amazing insights into our minds. And he pointed out that, you know, as I said, there's the wanting that's happening to get something. And then there's the getting of it. And when we get that thing, we have kind of two things happen. So it's a pleasant thing we're talking about here. So we're trying to get something pleasant. And so when we get that pleasant thing, we have what the Buddha called association with the loved. It feels good to have contact with pleasant experience. So we get that. We get that hit of pleasant experience. And the Buddha suggested actually recognizing how long does that pleasure actually last? And like poo with his honey, you know, the taste, that sweet taste, doesn't last very long. And so you need another taste and another taste and another taste and another taste until you get so full that it's unpleasant. So you have that, you know, so how long does that pleasure of the having actually last? And what is that pleasure of the having? Again, you may find the pleasure of the having is not just about the actual contact with the pleasant thing. So in that case, the taste of the honey on the tongue. But it may be partly about the idea that I have control over being able to have honey when I want to. That feels good. The sense of having control over our lives is one of the most powerful, pleasant, and motivating factors in our world. So that's a piece of that pleasure. It's not even about what we think it's about. It's about feeling like I'm in control. And that feeling like I'm in control is actually an illusion. I won't go into that right now. That's a whole talk on itself. So that's a piece. Look at what actually is pleasant in the experience. What is it that you're feeling is pleasant? A simple thing to check in. Okay, how much of it is pleasant body experience and how much of it is pleasant mental experience? Some of it has to do with the ideas we have about what we've gotten. So, you know, for instance, if we get something major in our lives like we want, you know, it's not just the thing, but it's all the ideas about, oh, I finally got that, or, oh, what will people think about that thing, and, oh, I can't wait to show this to so-and-so. All of those things are just, they're also thoughts, but they're pleasant thoughts about it. And so again, what is it that is pleasant that we're actually responding to? So that's one side of the equation with the beginning to notice. And as the Buddha suggested, notice how long it actually lasts. How long does the pleasure of that experience actually last? The other side to this equation is that when we get something we want, and this is what we don't usually notice. This piece is a piece we don't usually notice until we start really exploring it. And that is that when we get something that we want, the wanting goes away. In that moment, for maybe even just a brief moment, we not only have the experience of having the thing, but we have the experience, again, through the feeling of, I've got this, I figured it out, I'm in control, I've got this thing. The wanting goes away for a moment or a few moments. Wanting doesn't feel good. And when the wanting goes away, the feeling of lack goes away, the feeling of unsatisfactoriness goes away, all of that unpleasant experience goes away when the wanting goes away. And I will propose to you, from my own experience, ask you to check it out for yourself, that the bigger part of the pleasure that comes with getting something that we want is because the wanting goes away, not because of the pleasure of the having. Exploring this, the easiest place to explore this is if there's something simple that you want, a snack or a piece of chocolate or a latte or just something simple, the wanting springs up. Maybe very easy to follow through on that and get the thing and have that pleasure. Explore what it might mean to watch the wanting. So this puts you face to face with the unpleasantness of the wanting itself. and the possibility of seeing what happens when that wanting goes away. What is the experience when the wanting goes away, even if you don't follow through on the wanting? This can be, it may take some time to actually see this. You know, exploring this many times, most of the time what I've seen is I want something, I don't act on it, and then like I'm exploring, okay, what does that wanting feel like? And I notice that it's unpleasant, and then it's like hours later I remember, oh yeah, I didn't follow through on that wanting, but yeah, I don't want it anymore, but I didn't see it go away. And so you don't quite have the sense of what the release from wanting feels like. But keep exploring this possibility of watching. What does it feel like in the moment when wanting releases? In my own experience, it feels like being released from a vice grip. It's like the mind is just like caught in this whole world view of I need that thing in order to be happy. Even for something as simple as a piece of chocolate or a latte, it's phenomenal how powerful that urge is and how much that desire, the wanting, has this world view of delusion that in order for you to be happy, you have to get this thing. Wanting is shot through with delusion, this delusion of needing to have the thing in order to be okay. Wanting is not going to tell you that if wanting goes away, it won't be a problem. Wanting is not going to tell you that. So this wanting is obscures that very understanding. So exploring that kind of that side of the equation. So exploring the gratification, exploring the pleasure that comes from having what we want, we see the impermanence of the pleasure itself, and that the release from the wanting is a big piece of that gratification. And the release from the wanting does not require having the thing in order to happen. That's the other thing that wanting's not going to tell you. So you'll see those things happening, and that begins to point to what the Buddha talked, the second piece the Buddha talked about, understanding the danger of sense desire. The danger of sense desire is that it is inherently got this delusion embedded in it of the belief that the only way towards happiness is to get what I want, or to get rid of what I don't want. Both of the aversion and desire carry a similar kind of delusion in them. Aversion carrying the delusion that in order to be happy, you have to get rid of this unpleasant thing. Fix, change, control, desire. In order to be happy, you have to have this pleasant thing. Control it, own it, have it, keep it. The danger is that that whole mode, that whole delusion is based on a misperception, a misbelief, a lack of understanding of impermanence, of unreliability, of the fact that things in this world are not inherently controllable. Yes, we can control things for a time, but they're not inherently controllable. And so tying our happiness to controlling the world is doomed for failure. And so again, this is the question the Buddha asked. Is there another way to happiness than tying our happiness to controlling the world? And he found that actually, yes, that understanding how this whole process works, how the whole misunderstanding about desire and aversion works, as we understand that, the mind begins to recognize, wow, that's not a very helpful direction to go. This is not something we can do in our own minds in a way. You know, we can't decide to say, oh, I'm not going to want to want things, or I'm not going to want to get rid of things. You know, we're going to want that. We're going to, that's very deeply conditioned in us. Wanting and aversion have been, you know, kind of in control for a while, and they have managed to get us to this point, and that has strengthened their view that, well, it's worked so far. And sometimes it's not until we really run up against some kind of limitation that we're willing to try some other way. And that is what happened for me at when I first started this practice. I said I felt like I'd hit a wall, I'd hit bottom. Everything that people had told me I should do or try or say, nothing worked. And then when this radical idea came up about just watching it, watching your mind, seeing how it's doing things, it's like, well, I don't see how that'll work, but I'll give it a try. I was willing to give it a try because it was so clear to me that all the strategies that had been used so far were failing. So the danger of following through on this sense pleasure, of following through on that desire, sense desire, is that we get hooked by this is kind of the most insidious danger, is that we get hooked by this belief that happiness comes from getting what I want. Happiness comes from getting rid of what I don't want. And it's like we're on this, wheel, or this, like, in this hamster cage, spinning our wheels, because as soon as we get something that we want, looking at the gratification we see is just not too long after we get something that we want, the pleasure of that thing fades, and the only way that we have known to find pleasure is to find something else that we want. And so we start looking for something to want. This is a mechanism that we've been living in. This kind of like, as soon as we feel like there's some kind of, you know, some loss of something, immediately there's a, how do I find the next moment of pleasure? Maybe get rid of this unpleasant thing or have that pleasant thing. And so we are caught by this, believing that is the way towards happiness. Kind of an, this is as good as it gets strategy. That's all that we've ever known. And we cannot fathom another way. Actually, it's greed, aversion, and delusion that cannot fathom another way. Wanting can't fathom that there's another way than the having to be happy. Aversion can't fathom that there's another way than the getting rid of to be happy. And this is where the Buddhist teachings come in, to begin to explore and watch what's going on. As we do that, you know, we watch, we talked about this last week, you know, watching the aversion, watching the desire, we start to see that it's possible to witness those without buying into them. This is the tool the Buddha offered us, the wise mindfulness, looking at what's happening in the moment. As we do that with our greed, our desire, as we do it with aversion, we start to feel a little bit of a space around those states of mind. It allows a little bit of something different to happen. As we can know, oh, wanting's happening in the present moment. It's like we have stepped back a little bit from the belief of the wanting, the view that I have to have this thing. So there's a little bit of space around it that recognizes, oh, this is wanting that's happening in the present moment. And when that's possible, it's like there's another part of the mind that's engaged that doesn't necessarily buy into the belief of the wanting. And so what happens with that is there's the possibility of beginning to recognize, oh, maybe I don't have to follow through on that wanting. watch the wanting go. If you see the wanting go and feel that release of the wanting, that is such a powerful teaching, a powerful learning, direct learning in the mind for how a different kind of happiness is possible. It directly counters that delusion of wanting, that the only way to happiness is to get what I want. When we feel that release of that wanting and feel that release is peace, that release has a kind of different kind of happiness to it, completely different kind of happiness that wanting can't fathom, that aversion can't fathom, that delusion can't fathom. And so we see what's called the escape from this third piece that the Buddha encouraged us to recognize. The escape from sense desire is basically opening to and recognizing the release. As we turn with wise mindfulness to our aversion, to our greed, to our desire, we start to see the possibility of seeing it release. And in that release, wisdom understands. This isn't something that we could choose to pick up and say, yes, I'll stop doing this. But wisdom understands that that release that we feel from the wanting is a better kind of happiness. Wisdom understands that. And wisdom begins to get interested in that and get interested in exploring that direction. If you taste that kind of thing, some part of your mind is going to remember. You know, even when we're all caught up in wanting again, some part of the mind can remember, this kind of wanting, this kind of happiness that I'm getting is a lesser kind of happiness. It's not the kind of happiness that comes from release. Release of that wanting, release of that aversion. Now, I have to say, it seems like I always have to say this because it can so easily be misunderstood when I talk about the release of aversion, the release of desire. I'm not saying that we should not take action in the world. If we are seeing something harmful happening in the world, if we're seeing injustice happening in the world, this teaching of not acting on aversion, or the teaching about observing the aversion, actually, I will put it that way at this point, teaching about observing the aversion, observing the wanting. It's not about saying no action should happen here. Again, the perspective of wanting and aversion and delusion is that action will not happen unless I'm motivated by these forces of wanting and aversion. Wanting believes that that's how the world, things happen in the world. Aversion believes that's how things happen in the world. I do things when I'm angry about them. I do things when I have a passion about them that's got this constriction to it. And yet, again, that's the confusion of those states. The action also comes from wisdom. Action comes from compassion, from love, from generosity, from kindness. And they don't have to have that aversion and that wanting in them. So I want to just be clear that exploring this possibility of letting go of aversion and letting go of wanting doesn't mean that you become like some, you know, the classic example of some like guru on the top of a mountain who always is sitting with his eyes closed. It's not necessarily that. I mean, that may happen for some people that becomes their journey or their path. Most of us live in the world. Most of us are exploring this in the world. And so what does it mean to begin to explore that we will have mixed motivations? We're not going to necessarily be able to stop our aversion and our desire. But we can also recognize that embedded with those motivations, And probably why they have such a hold on us is because they are connected to a deep wish, a deep human wish for safety and happiness and well-being, the wish of metta, of kindness, of compassion. Anger can arise when something, you know, when the deep wish for happiness is somehow thwarted by a reality of unreliability. Fear can arise when the deep wish for safety runs up against uncontrollability. And so our reactions of desire and aversion, are coming partly based on these wholesome wishes to be safe, to be happy, to have connection in our lives, to have love and compassion and generosity. And so we will have mixed motivations. I would say that when we are angry, it has the mixed motivation of wanting to get rid of something that is creating struggle or stress, either for ourselves or others. And so sometimes what we can explore is tapping into or touching into what is with that reactivity. What is with this feeling of wanting something? A desire often comes with a wish for connection. That's metta. Can you connect to the metta side of it, or the compassion or the wisdom when you make an action? Can you acknowledge that yes, there is this aversion happening, and there's also this compassion happening in terms of taking an action in the world, especially around injustice in the world? And so I don't see that this teaching is pointing us towards non-action or inaction. In fact, quite the opposite. Because as we really let go, as greed, aversion, and delusion stop ruling our minds, compassion and wisdom and kindness begin to come to the fore. And compassion, boy, compassion really wants to act. Passion, it has the word passion in it. It's very active. And so it's not about non-action. And so the escape from sense desire is not an escape away from the world to me. In fact, it's an escape into a completely different kind of experience in the world. A place where we can act with skillfulness instead of from all of our confused habits. Let's see. I didn't look at my notes at all. Let's see if there's anything in here. I'll read one quote from the Buddha. Actually, I'll read a section of this because it talks about the Buddha's own kind of understanding of what he understood about sense pleasure. The Buddha says, "Formerly, when I lived the household life, I enjoyed myself, provided and endowed with the five cords of sense pleasure, seeing, smelling, hearing, tasting, touching. Contacted with objects that were desirable, agreeable, likable, connected with sense desire and provocative of greed. I had three palaces, one for the rainy season, one for the winter, and one for the summer. I lived in the rain's palace in the 4 months of the rainy season, enjoying myself with musicians, and I did not go down to the lower palace." Then he says, this is an important phrase. on a later occasion, having understood as they really are the origin, the passing away, the gratification and the danger and the escape in the case of sense pleasure. And so he explored for himself. The story of the Buddha is that he began to recognize that the sense pleasure that he lived with somehow wasn't, you know, and I think we all touch into this. We have the sense that, is this all there is? Is this all there is, this having these things and is this all there is? And that was maybe part of what motivated the Buddha's quest. So he began to explore, what is this sense pleasure? And so on a later occasion, it is said that it was, I think, about 7 years that the Buddha held this question and explored. And so, you know, it's a journey. It's a journey. It's not something that even through hearing the teachings that we just can understand and say, oh, I get it now. On a later occasion, we understand something. But it's not just on a later occasion following our lives in the way that we have been. We have to begin to investigate and explore. What is the gratification? What is the danger? What is the escape with respect to sense pleasure? So, on a later occasion, having understood as they really are the origin, the passing away, the gratification, the danger, and the escape in the case of sense pleasure, I abandoned the craving for sense pleasure. So this is another important piece. I abandoned the craving for sense pleasure. It doesn't say he abandoned sense pleasure. We can't abandon sense pleasure. Sense pleasure will happen. Pleasant experience will come to us. Unpleasant experience will come to us. It's just a natural phenomenon in our lives. He abandoned that orienting himself towards finding sense pleasure in his life, towards controlling, manipulating it, trying to keep it, fix it, hold it. I abandoned the craving for sense pleasure. I removed the fever of sense pleasure. And I dwell without thirst, with a mind inwardly at peace. So this is pointing to that escape, that a completely different experience is possible. I see other people who are not free from lust for sense pleasure, being devoured by craving for sense pleasure, burning with the fever of sense pleasure, indulging in sense pleasure, and I do not envy them. Why is that? Because there is a delight apart from sense pleasures, apart from unwholesome states, which surpasses even divine bliss. Since I take delight in that, I do not envy what is inferior. So pointing to, again, this the difference, you know, we've got this idea that the way that we've been going about finding happiness in our lives, this is as good as it gets. And the Buddha points, he actually points to, not only is the sense pleasure it's the least kind of happiness. He points to divine bliss as another kind of happiness that's not based in sense pleasure. My understanding is this is the bliss of concentration, when we turn and explore settling the mind through staying with experience. That kind of concentration can create very delightful experiences, very delightful, wholesome states of mind. And he says, a delight apart from sense pleasure which surpasses even divine bliss. My understanding is that this is the delight of understanding, of insight, of release from craving. Release from. It's not the appearance of anything, the release from the craving is more potent even than the delight of concentration. So we can get tastes of that. We can get tastes of that delight by being mindful, by being aware of what craving is like, what aversion is like. My understanding is that the Buddha lived in that space. Lived in that understanding. So, comments, questions, thoughts? Yeah. What a challenge.
I feel like poo.
So when you say that, what do you mean?
When I smell coffee, I want coffee. Yeah. When I smell popcorn, I want popcorn. But I've been noticing when I'm drinking that coffee, it's not as wonderful as smelling.
So there you go. That's the place to start. Exactly. As I said, the Buddha asked us to start where we are. It's like, investigate what the pleasure is. So the smelling of the coffee, maybe you can have all the pleasure you want by smelling.
You want to go smell a cup?
In any case, just again, noticing the where is the delight? What is it? How long does it last? So, you know, it is a challenge. The whole of the teaching is a challenge. And yet, you know, the Buddha just said, start where you are. Notice, what is the gratification? So you get the coffee, you want it. You might notice the wanting. You might notice yourself following through on that wanting. And then, well, how much pleasure is the having? And just see what happens as you explore it from that perspective. So don't pick up the whole thing. Instead, just look at, can I notice what I can notice? You know, what's here in this moment, given these are the conditions playing out right now. So it will transform your life to do that. Yeah, would you pass the mic over?
I mean, perhaps when I'm in a session, either here or Santa Cruz or in the city, other than that, I've spent my whole life wanting and being dissatisfied when I got it, be it material things, income, relationships. I've been chasing a want all my life.
We all have. And this is what I think is so amazing about the Buddha. You know, he said, hey, this is how we've been living. So it's, yes, we have been doing that. And we don't understand. Wanting doesn't understand there's another way. And so it takes someone like the Buddha to point it out for us. It's said that someone like the Buddha is a rare being who can see that for themselves. You know, he understood that for himself. Most of us need help. Most of us need to hear it and have somebody in front of us to say, yeah, it helped me. Try it. You know, go for it. It was amazing. Look at your wanting. Really, it'll be amazing. You know, so it's not a surprise that that's the way you've been living.
Years ago, I had a friend, two friends, and married, and they were the wealthiest couple in San Diego. And as I watched their wealth grow, it was so odd. It was never enough.
Yep. And that's exactly how it works. That is exactly how it works, that when we get what we want, it's never enough. We have to get the next thing because the getting of the thing is what we're going for and the release from that wanting. It's almost like we construct a wanting in order to let go of the wanting. We construct another wanting so we can let go of that wanting. It's like being in chains to do that. And that's, you know, again, it doesn't occur to us that there would be another way until somebody points it out and says with some confidence, you know, yeah, this has helped me. Try it. So, and we have to stop. So thank you for your attention.